Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Update with Living Compassion. This is Rebecca and I'm pleased to be joined today by Jen, who is just practically on the tarmac getting ready to go to Africa. So welcome, Jen.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. Thanks for doing the interview.
My pleasure. I always love to hear about the trip. So tell us a little bit about what the focus is. I assume English is a big part of it, but tell us what you hope to have happen there.
Love to. So I bet you won't be surprised that on the process level, we're hoping to up our game. I bet you could guess.
Yeah, the theme makes it all the way to Africa.
For sure, and it's so ripe for it there. And the thing that, forgive me, because I can never remember, what I put in a monthly update and what we said on the good news so far, but at some point it really struck me that to imagine that the children in Cantalumba are going to be able to really grasp the significance of learning English and the impact that that will have on their future, just living their lives completely within Cantalumba, I suddenly realized that's never going to happen. That, of course, what I get for myself in the process of learning, I really saw this last year in the Learning to Love Learning, and I see it everywhere, is that true learning, like learning was from that enthusiastic, that lit up, that self-generated kind of place, comes from the learner wanting to learn. You picture a classroom full of kids who are supposed to learn. Mm-hmm. And it's that, okay, now we're going to learn multiplication, everyone. And it's not a living kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And so what I realized is that, gosh, I would love it if the English took off in a way that the kids were hungry for it. Mm-hmm. And so what that sparked for me is to realize, let's get them exposed to what's available to them if they start to actually learn English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So let me see if I'm with you. So like to really spark that hunger, that intrinsic appreciation for what it is that they're being offered in the English lessons, and really show them the world outside of the Cantalumba compound, really, and see what. Because, how could they know what is valuable, what the value of English is when their world has not been expanded to see that? What is that, the insight needs experience?
Yeah.
Is that how we say it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're looking at ways to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, I think I did write this, actually, in the newsletter article this last month. It's come out already, right? Yeah, I'm not giving it away. but that... It really, it's so critical that it comes from each of us. I mean, it's the learning thing that I just said, but it's just like practice where, we're not out on sidewalk corners and, making speeches places and saying, gosh, come on, people, awareness practice, that's the way to go. You really got to get into awareness practice. Let me give you, can I tell you about awareness practice? Anyone who wants to, I mean, sure. We're plenty lit up about it and happy to share the information. But it's not a should, and so what it seems like we're doing in practice, and I feel like this is the practice element in the work in Africa, is that we're making available to people, including the kids themselves, an opportunity. And that the ones who really want it, who are on board, like the Teresas, mm-hmm. That's what I look at. I look at Teresa Capenda, my goodness. I mean, the way that she grew up, the odds that she would be doing what she's doing today are like almost nothing. And actually, had she had the opportunities that she's offering to the children in Cantalumba herself, she'd probably be the president of Zambia at this point.
Yeah.
So maybe we're lucky in that sense.
Well, yeah. And that, so what I think you're saying is that you're making these opportunities for the children and the adults available, and you're watching, not pushing, but watching to see who grabs it, who takes it and runs with it. And in that way of not proselytizing, you know, we're delighted to make it available to them. But, you know, it reminds me of something we talked about in strategic planning, too, whether our focus was going to be on investing in our resources, our limited resources, and the people who are really hungry for practice and ready to take that next step and up our game, or if we want to take the resources to really paving those paths really wide for brand new people who might find this path. And we decided on the former. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that's what you're looking at, too, with this project, is it?
Yeah. And, you know, that's a nice image that you just talked about, because what I saw was, I think, a big, huge piece of it is that let me tell you a little bit about the detail of one of the ways we're going to be doing this, which is that we're launching what I'm currently calling the Living English Program. So, like, really bringing English to life. And so when I'm on the ground, we're going to go on hopefully two field trips with probably just like 10 students, a very small number of students that we're going to start with. And we're going to go into the city, into the center of Indola, and we're going to go to business places. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, one of them may be a health clinic. And for the week or 10 days leading up to going on that trip, those kids will be in a series of classes that will have vocabulary and, you know, subject matter all around health, and all in English. And so then they go to the health clinic, and they're not, you know, they're going to learn so much. I mean, we're talking about kids who, it's probably a 20-minute drive into Indola, and some of the kids will have never been there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's so much about it that will be brand new for them. But the English, of course, is the key component, that what I'm hoping they'll realize is, whoa, you know, there is a whole world out here. People are actually doing these jobs. They're becoming nurses. They're becoming doctors. They're becoming the people sitting at the reception desk. They're, you know, all these things, and they're all speaking English. Mm-hmm. And so what's so critical about it, it feels like, is giving them a really concrete way to plug in to realize this is real. This is really a possibility for me, because, of course, in their own community, they're not seeing that, because the grown-ups, the adults around them don't have opportunity. They're not going off to jobs. They're not, you know, a lot of the men are in the bars. A lot of the women are, you know, doing the best they can to get by, maybe going into the forest and gathering sticks for firewood and selling it for just a little bit of money, and then trying to get a little bit of mealy meal to put on the table for the meal that day. So they're not seeing the possibility that education and in specific English can really offer to them.
Yeah, and I'm curious which age group are you hoping to take on the field trip?
So Teresa and I talked about that, and these first couple will be a complete experiment, but we're going to take 10 to like 15-year-olds. And I told her, I'm happy to take boys, but the majority have to be girls. And, you know, I'm a stickler on that, because that is a critical age for girls in Cantalumba. I mean, it's so common for 13-year-old girls to be pregnant, even to get married. So to really, and again, I think I wrote about this in a blog or somewhere. Again, it's not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, especially from a Buddhist perspective. I mean, Buddhists take a huge perspective on life. There is no right and wrong. There is no good and bad. But it's just back to that, is that what they want mm-hmm. for their lives? And if it is, great. Mm-hmm. You know, let's get them good health care. Let's get them, you know, safe pregnancy kinds of things. Let's make it so that, you know, they're not transmitting HIV to their babies. All of that stuff. But if they don't want that, if they want something else to help them to see, it's absolutely within their reach to have it.
Yeah, you know, it's so beautiful, because it sounds like exactly what we do in practice, in that nobody says you have to wake up and end suffering, but it sure is nice to know it's possible.
Yeah.
And until we do know it's possible, we really can't, can we? I mean, it's like it's not even available for us. So you're doing intangible, practical, real-life, you know, ways with these kids, the same thing we're doing on a spiritual level with our souls in practice.
Yeah.
And so I think it's so exciting to see. So you're going to be you and the, I think you do have a team, right? You're
yes.
there's a
mm-hmm.
okay. So the team is leaving Thursday.
We're actually I'm doing that workshop in New York City. So if you're in New York and you want to come join us for Saturday, please do. I think there's still spaces open for that. So yeah, I'm going through New York, and then two of us fly from New York on Sunday. So we land in Indola on Monday, and then another person is joining us in the middle of that next week.
Right. So you've got the workshop on March 1st,
mm-hmm.
and then a trip to Africa, some field trips, some wonderful projects there with the team, and then back sometime in March. So that sounds like a wonderful project, a wonderful way to kick off the spring of 2014. So we can look for blogs like maybe Tuesday or Wednesday of next week.
Or
Wednesday or Thursday of next week. Yeah, let's not get too ambitious.
We have to put a little jet lag time in there. And then in the internet connection, you've been, so you know. It's like the big joke is, are we going to run out of water today or electricity, or is the internet going to go down? And then when you have all three working, the internet's up, electricity's on, and you have water, and it's hot water. Wow, that's like, oh, my gosh. Luxury.
Yeah. Well, y'all, is there anything else that that you want to add before we turn it over to Sherry?
So actually, you know, the only other thing I was just glad you brought that element in of how practice doesn't require of us, it just offers us, but that, you know, in Sangha, and here we have the very literal specific Sangha, but my hope is that will begin to happen is that the kids that we're going to bring into this opportunity are the kids who are clearly most hungry for it. The kids who, every time, you know, there's a chance to come read, they want to read, you know, any opportunity, they're in there. And that then these are the kids that are going to be going on these field trips, and you can imagine those field trips are going to be popular.
Exactly.
And so what my hope is that the other kids are going to start looking over their shoulder at what's going on over there. And that, so sort of that medium, you know, yeah, well, if it really works. And it's funny, part of my motivation in doing all this is I put myself in that medium category where I wasn't sort of a pull myself up by my bootstraps kind of a person. But when I start seeing, whoa, something's going on over there, or I'm seeing something in that person, it easily ignites an inspiration in me. And so I think that's going to be the secondary benefit, maybe in a trip later in this year, that we'll be able to expand to the kids who start to really wake up to the possibility from their peers being involved.
Yeah, that is really a beautiful image of that, the kindling that gets ready to light, and then the fire will spread. It will ignite, and who knows where it'll end. Well, thank you, Jen. We're looking forward to hearing all about it and wishing you all safe travels.
Great. Thanks so much, Rebecca.
Okay, Michael, turn it over to you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Jen. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Jen, who's a monk.
The very same
Jen. Monastery Peace Center, the very same Jen. Welcome.
Thank you, Michael. Great to be here.
That was a really fun conversation.
It was fun, huh?
Yes, and I went to exactly the same place that Rebecca went, and that is that you are offering in Cantalumba the same thing that the guide offers to us, which
yep.
is an expansion of possibility of what's out there that we just can't get there or we don't see it. And yet, as you just said, when somebody points us to it, we can see what's there, and we're like, yes.
It's so true. That is my experience on both ends, you know? Because as I said, it's my experience in practice.
Yes.
You know, I can remember distinctly picking up one of Sherry's books for the first time and just that sense of, whoa.
Whoa.
And being on retreat the first time, too. Same thing.
Yes.
That real strong resonance. I loved that kindling image that Rebecca
yes.
used. And also just, it's such a lovely experience to, quote, offer it.
Yes.
Being in Cantalumba, seeing the kids take to it. Being in Sangha and, you know, being on all ends of it. You know how that is, too. Facilitating, being facilitated.
Yes.
And it's just like one, it's that, you know, circle with no remainder of the giving and the receiving of it.
Yes. Yeah, it's really fun.
Yep.
I can't wait to read the blogs.
I know.
Hear all about it.
I know. We think of you when we're writing. You're our number one blog. So if we're flagging in the evening, oh, I'm tired. I'll just think of Michael. He's going to get those blogs going.
Yes. Very fun. Very fun. I have some announcements here.
Excellent.
Registration is now open for the one-day workshop with Sherry on Saturday, March 29th in Los Altos.
Oh, great.
And it's a little different from most events in that there's no set theme. It's an opportunity to get guidance on whatever issues are most relevant to your practice right now.
Oh, you know what? I actually didn't realize that. That's a really fun day.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, very fun. And if I remember the description correctly, I think it's modeled on the Your Practice retreat at the monastery.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that it reminds me of is, I'm trying to think what, I think it was the year-long email class last year where we had this just week of a check-in, like an email class check-in that was just a week long. And
yes.
The question was basically that, what do you want? You know, what would you like guidance on in your practice right now? And it was thrilling. It was so exciting to do the process of really looking to see, well, what is it? What would I really like to have, get guidance on? And then to see the array of different things that people asked about and getting to hear the guide's response.
I remember that. I remember it, too, because I think we were allowed 100 words instead of the usual 50.
That's what I
remember,
too.
Oh, my goodness, I can write a novel. This is great.
That's what it felt like, didn't it? Yeah. So that's a really fun day because, gosh, people think to ask things that I think, my gosh, I never would have thought of that, but I have that same question.
Yes.
Really great.
Also open now is Guidance Day on Saturday, March 22nd. And again, that's also looking at whatever is most important to your practice now. And folks have a one-on-one phone appointment with an experienced practitioner.
Yeah, and that's a nice chance to talk about something that you might not talk about on the radio show. Maybe it's a particular content that, you know, for whatever reason, doesn't feel like you want to bring it up on the radio show. So that's a nice opportunity for that.
Yes. And in our year-long theme, our first at-home workshop is coming up on Saturday, March 8th, and that is practice drills for playing the game.
Oh, fun. I'm going to attempt to stay up till 2 in the morning to participate.
Oh, my goodness.
Cool thing. I get to have the European open-air experience.
An extended version, shall we say.
Yeah, exactly. Well, 2 in the morning actually is when it would be ending, so I can't
be
too
good.
Dramatic.
Okay, good. And as we just heard, there's still time to sign up for the Joy and Freedom of Acceptance workshop with you, Jen, this Saturday in New York City.
Oh.
And registration closes Friday at 5 p.m. And you know what I realized in reading those announcements is that every Saturday for 4 of the next 5 Saturdays, there's a practice opportunity.
Wow. So if you don't mind getting on the plane to New York and then coming back to Boston, then you are set.
Use up those frequent flyer miles.
Exactly. No better use than that. That's one of the things I love in the as this email class is ending, just that sense of over and over hearing people basically say, there's nothing more important than practice. You know,
yes.
Practice,
yes.
I mean, what would be more important than waking up? Nothing.
Yes, than being here.
Yeah, than being here. So if you're going to go spend your Saturday somewhere, wow, it's like no, complete no-brainer.
Great. So visit schedule.livingcompassion.org for more information on these and all of the other wonderful events. And as a reminder, the call-in number today is 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. The show ID is 15406, and then you'd enter your PIN followed by pound. And one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
Michael.
Okay, thank you, Jen. Here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Gabriel.
Hey, Gabriel.
Hi. I'm actually coming to see you Saturday, so I'm excited about that.
I was just going to ask because I was remembering you were right in that area. Very good. Excellent.
Yes, I can't wait. I would like to talk a little bit about something I'm in the middle of. I've been in the process of writing a book for 2 years.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of hard. People ask me what it's about, and it's difficult for me to say what it is. It's sort of like an autobiography, but like with spiritual and self-help elements in it.
Okay.
I've written it and rewritten it and rewritten chapters, and I keep like going back to write them, and I keep getting these like very uncomfortable feelings as I'm writing things, because I think I'm seeing it in a more mature way now than I was when I was experiencing them. And I guess I just want to talk about like that discomfort, because it's hard to describe what the discomfort is, but it sort of like keeps me from writing more or like going deeper into myself or into what I'm writing.
So that sounds like a subtle level of paying attention you're doing. As you're doing the process of writing, you're noticing a feeling that that feels uncomfortable in some way, and that you realize that seems to be stopping you from continuing the writing process or maybe from going deeper into the writing process.
Yeah, because I think for a long time... I saw myself as a victim, and I'm writing the book, and I guess a very deep part of me that has a lot of integrity refuses to you know, pretty much have like an egocentric story all about how I was the victim of everything. And when I see a bigger picture and have more perspective, and I see it more like fairly on all sides, and I see everybody's point and all of that, I sort of start to feel like, well, not me, but egocentric karmic conditioning starts to feel like holy water is being like, you know, thrown at it.
Yeah, that is so key, what you just said. That's a huge distinction, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not you. It's not your discomfort.
Right, it's not my discomfort, but I guess what's confusing me is how I'm experiencing it, and also how it's controlling, sort of like it, like in part, it's in charge of whether I continue or I don't.
Yeah, that's sobering to see, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sobering, and I think one of the things that has fueled it the most at this point in my practice is like its strategy to like demonize itself.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean by that? So it sort of like says like, you know, it's using this trick of like, I shouldn't be here. I'm bad. I'm destroying your process.
Yeah.
I'm creating sabotage for you. And it's sort of like another.
What I project Sherry's talking about when she talks about ego talking to ego.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's tricky, because it's very tricky, because there's a sense in spirituality, it seems, that the whole goal of practice, or the whole goal of it, is to eradicate it or eliminate it or sort of like change it or
eradicate or eliminate ego.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well,
it seems like that's the whole point of the whole thing.
Well, you know, I don't know if I can speak to the whole point of the whole thing, but certainly
yeah.
there's the possibility of, well, exactly what you just said, basically, which is that what we get to in practice at a certain point, I project we see it intuitively when we first start practicing, and that's what brings us to practice, but I think it takes quite a while until we can articulate what you just said, which is that, wow, this is in charge of my life. When it says X, I do X. When it says don't do Y, I don't do Y. I mean, it's in charge. And then we begin the practice of seeing how it's doing that. And then as that's happening, at least in my experience, the willingness to make a different choice is building, along with the skills to do that, because it's really, really ingrained to go with its program. So what's possible for us at a certain point is to begin to make a different choice and to no longer have that be in charge of our lives.
Yeah, but then, like, talking about it like this makes it sound so real. And then I guess at another level I see how it's not real. But
right,
it
exactly.
It's
an illusion. But the thing is, the process of that being in charge, of you being controlled, basically, in this case, the content is not being allowed to write in the way you want to
mm-hmm.
write, that process mm-hmm. is happening. So getting into a debate over, well, is it real, is it not real, and, I mean, that's just another derailment, right?
Right. That's what fuels it, I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So then, what's the alternative so that I can actually write?
Come to the workshop on Saturday. I mean, it's funny. It's Gabriel,
yeah.
Truly. I mean, what you are talking about is exactly what we're going to be looking at on Saturday.
Yeah.
And you know, I can talk about it because we always talk about the same thing in practice, right? It's always, we just look at it from different and interesting and new angles. But
mm-hmm.
but essentially, to me, you're doing what there is to do, which is that you're paying attention. And you're seeing what it does. And you're watching it as it does it. And invariably, if you keep doing that, if you keep paying attention, you're going to see more and more and more. And just because that's the way it works, not because you're making any big effort or you're trying hard or you're doing anything, just because awareness makes a change, it will begin to shift over time. It will no longer be able to have that power over you if you continue to pay attention in that way.
Mm-hmm.
It just won't. I mean, another little trick along the way is that, you know, we don't know how long it's going to take, you know. I mean, ego will then try to get us into a big hurry, right? Well, I mean, come on, I've been looking at this for how long, and come on, can't I just? But if we can cultivate an attitude of mind of, you know, loving the human as we go through this process and just being relaxed and realizing we're not going anywhere, there's nothing to do, nowhere to get, it makes
sense. That's another...
Uh-huh.
That's a new thing that I've discovered, and sort of in the process of writing the book, I've come to terms with. I started out writing about my past and how I was depressed and how I was self-sabotaging to a great degree and all that. And now I'm getting to a place where I'm seeing it more as just a part of life for many of us, and sort of just like accepting
yeah.
it and.
Yeah.
And being okay with the fact that, you know, that we go through this. And that's really given me a lot more distance from it. And I could see, so I'm no longer trying to say there's something wrong with the fact that I had it or
exactly.
that I was that entranced, or that deluded. It's just, it seems to be, I don't even want to say natural, but it just seems to be a part of what a lot of us
yep.
Experience.
And what a great gift. I mean, if
yeah.
you ever did publish your book or, you know, other people got to read it, but what a great gift for someone who's coming along down the path and encounters that piece of information that, whoa, there's nothing wrong with this? I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. That's the title of my book, The Gift.
Oh, very good.
Great. I look forward to seeing you Saturday.
I do too, Gabriel. I'm so glad you're coming.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. We'll
see you there.
We'll continue the conversation. Okay.
We will. Okay.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Gabriel. You're listening to Open Air. Jen, we're going to hear from our coaches program, and then we'll be back to talk to more callers.
All righty.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have more callers, Jen.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Michael. Hey, Jen. It's Jodine in San Francisco.
Hey, Jodine.
Hi. Well, Jen, your being on the call tonight instead of Sherry resolved a dilemma for me.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Because I called last month, and Sherry gave me some homework, and I did my homework, and I had some really interesting insights, but I want to talk about something else.
Oh, perfect. So then you can report back the next time you talk to her.
Yeah. And I will absolutely remember.
Good.
So what I'm looking at right now is this situation where I saw, like, conditioning taking two sides of a duality. And I see that somehow in the middle of all of this, I'm getting, like, dragged into some pretty suffering places. With as little content as I can, I'm seeing that conditioning holds standards, all sorts of standards about me.
Uh-huh.
And how I should live my life, and my conditioned beliefs, they stem from those standards somehow,
yeah.
or whatever. Like, if I behave according to my conditioned beliefs, then I will be meeting the standard.
Right. Oh, that's
if that makes sense.
That makes total sense, and that's such a good belief in itself. Isn't it? That because we believe that if I do meet those standards, which A, supposedly is possible, and B, if I meet them, then I'm going to get what it's never named, but somehow I'm going to be the person I should be, or get what I want to get, or have the life I'm supposed to have.
Be the person I should be for sure is bit, like, I know it's always lurking under there for me. And the other thing is that when there's really real content, all of this, like, blows way, like, the volume gets turned way up on all this stuff. So for me, I've been having all this stuff going on around my health,
mm-hmm.
Which is you know, really, really real. Mm-hmm. And karmically, I guess, you know, I get in these situations where, like, the doctors don't quite know what to do or say.
Mm-hmm. In other words, in this situation is not the first time that you've been here. This is a karmic pattern.
Right, and like specifically in health, I mean, the karmic pattern for me, I know, is looking to authorities to tell me what to do, you know, how to be okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in this specific content, it's about my health. Like,
and then they don't know.
Yes. Uh-huh. So, it's played out a number of ways. Interesting to note.
Uh-huh.
In terms of a life story, you know, sometimes they absolutely know 100% what I should do, you know, and then I rebel against that.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and then when they don't know what I should do, you know, somebody desperately wants them to just tell me, you know. And what I saw recently is that someone close to me is also dealing with a really real health issue. And for both of us, one thing that the medical establishment has said is that you could have surgery and that would kind of fix most of your problem. And in where I saw conditioning taking both sides, it was like, for me, you know, what came up was, oh no, that surgery is going to be like the last resort, you know, I would ever try, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of alternative medicine out there, and, you know, I'm going to go and see, you know, and, you know, and that kind of, what do they call that? In the Enneagram, I'm a six.
The counterphobic?
Counterphobic, yeah. So there's the counterphobic reaction to the doctors. But then I project onto my loved one, you should absolutely have this surgery. Like, why would you even think about doing anything else?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And as you can imagine, you know, that's not a terribly popular position to take. And, you know,
you have a reaction to that reaction. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, my loved one has a reaction to that too. Like,
uh-huh.
You know, because I'm kind of like, you know, I found myself feeling like I know what you should do, and it's this.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, as if it was like in my earlier life, the doctors who said, you know, you should absolutely do this.
Right.
So
there's a reaction to anyone having a stance of, I know what you should do.
Yes, when I'm on the receiving end of that.
Right.
But then I can easily get identified and project it, you know, and be the kind of perpetrator, you know, that I'm experiencing internally towards someone else.
In other words, see if I'm tracking. So you might then take that stance towards someone else where they're looking at a choice and you have a clear opinion of which way they should go.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, that's another good one to see, isn't it? I mean, if we can see it without self-hate, it can really engender a lot of compassion for everyone involved.
Yeah. And I have to say that I did kind of drop out of some real suffering places, you know, into compassion when I actually connected. You know, I wasn't even thinking about, my, you know, like my doctors are talking about surgery too, you know, like I was saying, no, that's the last resort for me. It's almost like I pushed it out of my mind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then I was like, wait a minute, you know, when the surgery word came up, you know, my reaction was, oh no. And why, you know, and who in me doesn't allow a loved one to have, you know, whatever reaction he's going to have.
Exactly. Really.
And, you know, yeah. And, oh.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Just as I was saying that, I'm realizing that may actually be kind of the tragedy of conditioning, that I can't have my authentic experiences.
Truly, truly, because, you know, Jodine, as you lay it out, health is. It's one of those big, really real ones for all of us, you know, and it brings up so much conditioning and so many beliefs and everything you started with. And it can also, in my experience, really put us squarely in touch with our humanity and with our exquisite vulnerability. And that, as you describe it, it seems like the potential for love in it is huge. And that, I'll bet you anything, that's what conditioning is working overtime to cover over. Because, of course, all the reactions that are happening between you and your loved one, I imagine at the very core of them, it's all about love.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
Yeah.
And so we get all, like, swirled up in our heads over, well, gosh, I can't believe I did that to him. And, well, he shouldn't have said that to me. And, you know, but really, I mean, that's why when you said a minute ago, I can't remember how you said it, but basically it sounded like you got to a place of authenticity and that suddenly you tapped in underneath all of that conditioned swirl going on to what's really happening underneath.
Right, by bringing the projection back. Me.
And by really looking squarely at what's going on for you and letting you have whatever reactions you're having on all sides of it. I mean, even if the reaction is irritation to his reaction, you know?
Yeah.
That's not wrong. Now, you don't necessarily need to, you know, go into a conversation with him about it and, you know, work that all out and, you know, the old speak my truth thing. but having that, you know, it's like whatever goes on inside of us is completely all right if we can, you know, it's the great thing about recording and listening because that's the venue that's available to us to receive all of it in unconditional love and acceptance.
Yes. Yeah, the recording and listening actually helps when this duality, I mean, for lots of things, but on the duality thing, like where I can hear myself, like, speaking one side of the duality one day,
yeah.
And then I have that on tape,
yeah.
And then the next day or 2 days later, I'm on the other end of it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like,
wait,
yeah, it kind of keeps you honest.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah. And, you know, what occurs to me, too, that, and I'm sure you're recording a ton through all of this, but that's really a great place to go in terms of, you know, the doctors are saying this, and now they know, and now they don't know, and there's this option on the table, and I want that, I don't want that, to, you know, really take it to the mentor.
Yeah, so much. I mean, I think it's so great to have the recorder and, you know, it's one of these things before recording and listening, you know, my best friend would be like so sick of hearing about.
Right.
You know, because like I would call a friend to kind of talk it out.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So I absolutely have a lot of those kinds of recordings. So I think I'll sign off and just keep recording about this and keep looking.
Yeah, and keep calling in. You know, it's a lot. It's a huge practice opportunity. There's a ton to look at. There's a lot to see through. And with that, whenever there's something that has a huge level of challenge, you know, it's just like our upping our game year, then there's equal opportunity for, you know, seeing through things, for having breakthroughs, for really taking the acceptance, the unconditional love, to another level.
When is that not a huge blessing? But you know, at times like these, quote unquote, yeah.
Exactly.
It is a huge blessing.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks for the update, Jodine.
Okay. Thank you.
Take good care.
Okay. You too. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jodine. You're listening to Open Air. Jen, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be back.
Great.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Jen.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Laura from San Diego.
Hey, Laura.
Hey, Jen. Hey, Michael. How are you guys?
Hi.
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I wasn't expecting to get on. I've just been sitting here listening.
Oh, cool.
So I have no clue what I'm going to ask. I work on Tuesdays all the time, and so my clients might just have canceled. So I thought, oh, it's a perfect opportunity. So I feel really blessed. I'm like, I'm a little tongue-tied. I really do not know what I didn't put any effort into it because I really thought I would just be listening the whole time.
You'll just be listening, and here you are, live on the air.
Here I am.
What's going on in practice? We could talk about that.
That would always be a good thing to talk about. I have really been upping my game since like this whole thing started. I love the language. I love the metaphor. I'm an athlete at heart, and so I was reflecting the other day on a walk around what that looked like for me. And so, you know, I've been a part of the Sangha now since I think about, I don't know, 2005 or so. But I am more involved intricately than I feel like I ever have been. I'm doing Zen awareness coaching. I'm in the email class. I signed up for the year-long retreat. I'm recording and listening.
You're calling into the radio show.
I'm calling into the radio show. Every time I exercise, I'm listening to the archives. So it just feels like Sangha's all around me.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And what I've stumbled upon is as I've upped my game in these ways, it's the voice, the karmic stories that have been coming up is where ego-centered karmic conditioning is trying to get me is, well, you're not connected. You don't really know these people, you know, that are watching in the email thing is like, well, Sherry's response to someone else seemed more blah, 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 and whatever. I mean, and it's just so, like, fascinating to watch how it's trying to use these old experiences from years, years, years ago. And like, part of me is, like, vulnerable to it, but the other, the practice part of me sees it for what it is.
And, you know, Laura, as you say it, it's like, and I don't know if you're there yet, but it's almost like we can be grateful for it. Because it's in there. It's in there. You know, it's like we started out with Gabriel. It's on some level, we've got that conditioning rattling around. And just because it's not triggered doesn't mean it's not in there. So being in the middle of that level of commitment to practice and have it come up is, it's the thing Ashwini always says, we can't transcend what we haven't encountered.
That's exactly what just came, dropped in as you were saying that. Yeah, so trying to not, like, really working on not being scared of it.
Yes.
You know, what,
yes,
I think one of you guys said it on the radio show a few archives ago around, like, conditioning not having something to threaten you with.
Yes.
So it's like it found something that it can threaten you with, and, but I'm really working on staying present with myself and, you know, just mentoring that piece of me that there's, no, that's just not, that's not what's going on. You're fine. Everything's good. You're connected.
Yep. In fact, why is it talking to us about connection, you know, and not being connected? Because we're connected.
Yeah.
I mean, that's truly the only, do you remember that World of Opposites blog that Sherry wrote? Oh, I think it was last fall sometimes. But essentially the theme of it being that conditioning is always going to talk to us about the exact opposite thing that's actually going on. So if you're really connecting with Sangha, then conditioning is going to talk to you about how you're not connected.
Oh, I missed that. So, yeah, no, that, okay, that resonates, yeah. Okay.
So someone who, you know, their deepest desire is to serve in the world and, you know, be for the good of all, conditioning is going to talk to that person about how incredibly selfish they are.
Yes.
So it always uses the flip of what, and I project, I can't remember if Sherry talked about this in the blog, but I project it's because it's threatened by the power of the authenticity in a particular form. So in this case, the power that being, that you really realizing it, really getting it, how connected you are, that is so powerful that it's got to start a campaign in the other direction.
Yeah, that really resonates. My whole body just kind of vibrates, you know, when you're, as you're talking about that. And it's almost like, you know, like I'm more on the side of believing my authentic nature, right, in life than it.
Yeah, exactly. So every time that comes up, the voices say, you know, oh, look at how she responded to yours versus whatever, or you're not connected. Good. Okay. This is a chance to, you know, to build that muscle, to do that drill, to take that shot on goal again.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. So that's what's going on in practice for me. It's really exciting.
It is exciting. It's really exciting. Yeah. It's really a time of, you know, that it, I just thought of that March 8th workshop of, you know, doing the drills. Because it's always coming at us. You know, it's always coming at us with something. And so we want to really hone our skills, sharpen our game, so we're ready. And then it really, truly does, I mean, it sounds funny sometimes, you know, when we're in a hard place, it sounds so Pollyanna, but it becomes fun.
Yeah.
You can imagine, you know, like on the basketball court and doing our drills, it's fun. You want
it is
doing those drills. You want someone who's, you know, can put up a good fight. You know, who's not just gonna let you get straight to the ball, to the basket.
That's a good point because it makes me hones my skill.
Yeah.
Right. It makes me be a better player when I'm up against someone better than me or who's been practicing at it more than I have.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
To go back to your fear thing, because that was so key, practicing not being afraid of it. If our relationship with egocentric karmic conditioning is one of, good, go ahead, you know, whatever you're going to do, and I'm going to practice with it, then there's nothing it has over us. Nothing. Because we're not living in fear of being identified or of that happening again. Or, but what about when it brings out the big guns? Well, then I'll practice.
Oh, I love that, Jen. That's really, no, I can really take that one on. I really like shifting the energy. It's kind of like, what is it in shiatsu or whatever that martial arts is
exactly.
When they throw a punch at you, you just kind of pull the energy
shift
it or something.
Exactly. That's the image.
Well, thank you so much, both
thank
of you.
I'm glad you got us muted.
Me too. I'm so in deep appreciation for all that you guys offer and being a part of it all.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, it's all of us. It truly is. Yeah, we're all offering it.
Yes. So deep kesho to all of you and have a good night.
And to you, Laura. Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. Yes, it does take all of us, doesn't it, Jen?
It takes. It truly does.
Which is fun. I think I was talking about this with Sherry a while ago, that each of us has a role to play, and no one can replace that role that each of us plays.
I loved that conversation, Michael. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that if, I think she said, you know, if Michael's not there, we're missing Michael.
Yes.
You know, it's not like, oh, whatever, we'll just pull someone else in.
Yeah, it's good because it requires each of us to show up.
It does. And it's motivation for, you know, when we're getting dragged underwater, you know, getting identified, and it feels like, oh, I can't, what difference does it make? It makes a difference.
Yes.
You know, it makes a difference. I remember one of the responses to the email class in this last class that had a big impact for me was someone basically saying, gosh, I keep practicing and then it comes at me, and I practice and it comes at me. And Sherry basically said, yeah, you know, yeah, that's how it works. She said, it's never going to just roll over and go, oh, okay, you win. You know, it's fighting for its life and we have to fight for ours. And I think the last line was, it was get on up.
So, yes. Great. Great. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Jen. It's Cherie from Texas. How are you?
Good, Cherie. How are you?
I'm doing fine. My heart is just pounding because, you know, I'm just so tired of conditioning telling me what to think and feel and do that lately I've sort of, when I become aware of what conditioning is, you know, trying to scare me into doing or not doing, then I try to do the opposite of that.
Oh,
and,
I love it.
And it did not want me to call in tonight. So, and it was scaring me to death about it. So I said, I'm going to call in anyway. And so here I am.
That is such a good practice. Oh, that's such a good practice. It says this, I'm doing the other. Yep.
Yeah. It's scared me my whole life, and I'm just tired of being scared.
Yeah. That's a really powerful place to be. Just kind of. Just I'm not willing for it anymore. There, I'm ready to try something else.
Yeah. I mean, it was telling me things like, you really don't have anything to talk about. You're just a beginner. There's nothing of value that you could share. And you're from Texas. They'll make fun of you. And, you know, on and on and on. And so, you know, I'm here anyway.
Excellent. Good for you. And, you know, we're back to the world of opposites conversation we just had, right? You have nothing to say, blah, and it's absolutely the complete opposite, right? You have a huge thing. You know, you have your contribution, just like Michael and I were just talking about.
That's right. And, you know, I'm so grateful for that online class that we just ended, for everybody who participated, because, you know, I would record and then listen to everybody's responses and then Sherry's responses to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so funny because a lot of times so many of but so much of what people had to say was what I'd been thinking too, and, you know, just hadn't put it down on paper or, you know, in the email, and there it was.
Yep.
Someone else had said it for me, and then Sherry was responding, and I was getting the benefit of all of that.
Yep.
And so it's just been fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, that was completely my experience too, just that. And I heard Sherry talking about saying that this class just broke records for people sticking with it and, you know, responding to every class. And, you know, and I said, I just have a feeling from things that I'm hearing that I'll bet you anything it broke records in terms of people reading all the responses too and recording them and listening to them. And it's just, it's been amazing.
It's been phenomenal.
Yep.
Well, and I also wanted to say that during this class, I made some recordings of, and I know that Sherry said to do this, but, you know, you just think, well, surely she didn't really mean that, but you know, that's conditioning again, trying to talk you out of stuff.
Sure.
And so I would make a recording. I made recordings of just a lot of reassurances, and I said them in a very loving, kind voice, as if I was talking to a small child,
mm-hmm.
Whom I loved very much. And I've got this on repeat, and I listen to it all night long. Or it's, you know, it's repeating all night long,
yeah,
on the
yeah.
very low level,
yeah.
In my ear while I'm sleeping. Huh. And I'm so delighted to report that the anxiety that usually wakes me up early in the morning is not as present anymore. It's not happening as much anymore.
Wow.
And when it does happen, you know, I'm awake and I'm, you know, got this anxiety thing going on. Well, then there's that recording going in my ear, and I'm going, and then I can take a deep breath.
Yeah.
And it's all okay.
Yeah.
And I hear myself thinking, that gut clench is just a physical sensation. You don't need to believe that interpretation of it, that, you know, the fight or flight response.
Yep. Yep.
And it's been such a wonderful thing.
Yeah, truly. That is such a great story. And I'm trying to remember, I think it was on the last Thursday radio show of the email class, where Sherry was talking about talking to someone who had a realization that forever she was a very good at a sport, and she had a coach who would, you know, give her tips. Okay, why don't you try this? And that she realized she would do her version of what the coach was suggesting instead of actually just doing what the coach suggested. And to me, that's what you just gave us a testimonial for. Here's the guidance. Just do the guidance and try it out. And then, truly, you're transformed in that process.
Yes. And it's having that faith, you know,
yeah.
in life and in the guidance that you get. And having it be okay that if I don't do it exactly right, well, it's still something I can learn from.
Exactly. Oh, I've been enjoying that too, Sheree. Just that with a mentor, that sense of like, you know, okay, so maybe a practice is suggested and set out to do it, and the voices are like, well, you're not doing it right, or that's not how it meant. With the mentor, it's like, well, let's just try. Let's just experiment. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? I mean, we just keep doing it until kind of if we use the sports metaphor, we hit the sweet spot. And then, oh, wow, I think that was it. Oh, cool, fun. But it's just a process of learning. It's not we don't have to worry about getting it wrong.
That's right. It's not life or death, like like conditioning tells you.
Exactly.
That's another thing that conditioning will use to scare me. Well, it's, you know, this urgency that, you know, we've always talked about that comes from conditioning, the urgency, the fear.
Right.
You know, when that comes up and I feel that gut clench,
yep.
I know immediately it's conditioning.
Yep, yep. And that in itself is a helpful check-in. Okay, conditioning's here. All right,
yeah.
Got it. And that can be a cue for, you know, whatever you're currently practicing. Okay, then extra kindness or deep breath into the, you know, solar plexus area or whatever, wherever that clench is happening. But whatever practice you have, instead of that, it's like the conversation we were having with Laura, that's supposed to throw you into fear, right? Oh, God, oh, no, this is happening again. But instead, it can be our cue to practice whatever we're practicing right now, kindness, love, acceptance, unconditional love, you know, compassion.
Isn't that the best?
Truly.
I mean, really, it's such a relief to know that I don't have to believe what conditioning is telling me. I have a choice.
Yeah.
I didn't know that before.
Yeah. It takes me back to our conversation on the Good News Update this morning. I mean, this morning, an hour ago. Just that, wow, just being exposed to the possibility is so revolutionary.
Yeah, how fortunate are we, huh?
How fortunate are we? Yeah, really. Yeah, truly. And that something like the radio show is just, you know, I mean, week after week, we just all our best friends start, you know, pop out from, oh, you know, from Texas and from San Diego and from, I mean, all over the country, all over the world. You know, everyone's out there doing their thing, practicing their little hearts out.
I am just so delighted to be part of this. And I just thank everybody that's part of Sangha.
Me too. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you've got a few more minutes, so I want to get off and let you talk to somebody else. But thank you, Jen, and
okay. Thank
you, Michael.
All right.
Appreciate you guys.
Take care. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Cherie. You've been listening to Open Air. And, Jen, we are at 5:58.
Yeah, that seems a little tight, doesn't it, Michael?
A little tight, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. So I'm going to wish you a fabulous trip to New York City and to Africa and to bring the blessings of practice everywhere.
Thank you. And I figure my greatest challenge in that itinerary will be packing. Because dead
That's
of winter
true.
In New York and the middle of summer in Africa. So.
Oh, my goodness.
I have one tip. If I can
layers.
Cross that hurdle. Layers.
Layers.
Exactly. I'm thinking I'll bring all my summer clothes in just one big, huge, heavy jacket.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Have a fabulous time.
I definitely will. And you will be hearing from us almost
Wonderful.
Long.
Thank you, Jen.
Thank you, Michael.
Good night.
Good night.